So we're in Rosh Hashanah on Daf Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. If everyone can turn to Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, we're four lines in from the top of the Yamud. Says the Gemara, commenting on what our Mishnah told us on Chavav Amud Beis, the Mishnah says that when you have on Rosh Hashanah the blowing of the shofar in the Beis Hamikdash, so you have the shofar be'emsa, you have the shofar in between the two chatzotras that are flanking the shofar on the sides. But when you have, and they're all blowing together, and when you have a tainus tzibur, so then you have two shofaros on the two sides, and then you have the chatzotra in the middle. Because as the Mishnah taught us, the main part of the blowing on a tainus is that a person should have the blowing of the chatzotra, so that's in the middle, like when you have a chassidish rebbe, so you have him in the middle, and you have the gabayim on the side. They're less important. So you always have the thing that's more important in the middle, so too over here. So let's see. Ask the Gemara the following question. You're telling me on Rosh Hashanah in the Beis Hamikdash, the way they had it formulated was that they had two chatzotzos on the side blowing, and then they had one in the middle of a shofar, all blowing at the same time. Is it possible that you can hear two different sounds at the same time? So here I'm going to have the shofar blowing at the same time as the chatzotzos blowing, and I'm going to be able to be mekayim my mitzvah of shofar. How could it be? Vatanya, don't we know from a brisa? Zachar v'shamar b'dibur echad nemru. Zachar and Shamar were said at the same time. On the occasion of Maimon Har Sinai, when we were given the Aseres HaDibra, Zachar and Shamar were said together. Masha ein hapeh yecholu l'daber. A person can speak quickly, but you can never say two words at the very same time. That's an impossibility. Ve'ein ha'ozen yecholu l'shmoa. I can have a very good hearing. I can have a very good sense of hearing. I can have my hearing aids all the way up, but if somebody is saying two things and you know, if one person is saying one thing, one person is saying the other, I cannot possibly hear both of them at the same time. So the Gemara says that was on the occasion, it was a one-time miracle that happened on the occasion of Har Sinai at the Aseres HaDibros. That's when we had this unbelievable experience of saying two things at once and hearing two things at once. But otherwise, if you have two voices, two sounds at the same time, one is not able to distinguish, one is not able to differentiate between the two of them, and you cannot really hear each one separately. So therefore the Gemara asks, how was I able to be Mekayim HaMitzvah of Shofar if we know that the shofar was being blown at the same time as the chatzotzera, both of them were making noise, how was I able to hear? Says the Gemara, the answer is, lakach marich b'shofar. The answer is that they all started off to blow together. So they had a choir leader, right? A choir conductor. So they had somebody who was standing in front saying, okay, let's go. On count of three, chatzotzeras and shofar are both going to blow. Then it was going to be 1 or 2 seconds blowing the chatzotzera, but then the shofar was marach. The shofar continued. So you got the tail end of the shofar blowing, and that was going to count. That was going to be good enough for your mitzvah blowing shofar.
The chatzotzos, they didn't have to hear? Was only blown?
No, chatzotzos, you didn't have to hear. Because the ikar mitzvah of the yom was the shofar. Masha ein kein, when you have the case of a tainus tzibur. So then the ikar mitzvah is the chatzotzera, not the shofar. So they did the opposite. They had the two shofars, they would all start on par together with the chatzotzera, then the shofar would fade out, and the chatzotzera would go on longer so that people could be mekayim their mitzvah of hearing the chatzotzera on a tainus tzibur. Lememra says the Gemara, do you mean to tell me, Dechishama sof hatkiya below tchilasa yatsa, you mean to tell me that if I hear just the end of a blowing, and I don't hear the beginning of the blowing, like the case over here, because I started together the blowing with the chatzotzera, so nobody was mekayim their mitzvah then. Then all of a sudden, since the shofar goes a little bit longer, now I have the kiyum hamitzvah of shofar because of that longer period that the shofar was blowing. You mean to tell me that's good enough? If I hear just the end without the beginning, it's good. Umemela, and if that's the case, then tchilas tkiya below sofa tkiya yatsa. If that's the case, then I can go in the opposite direction also. If I hear just the beginning of a blowing, and I somehow something gets disconnected along the way and I get interrupted and I'm not able to hear the rest of it, you mean to tell me that's good enough? Tashma? Let's see if that's correct. Taka barishona umashach bishniya kishtayim. So let's say, what do I do? What's the gimel over here? So let's say I have taka barishona. Let's say I first blow a tkiya, normally, the way I'm supposed to. And now I go ahead, and what am I supposed to do afterward? Blow another tkiya. So instead of blowing three tkiyas in a row, I go ahead and I blow one tkiya normally, and now I blow the second tkiya very long. And it's long enough that it would have been two tkiyos, right? Had I stopped in the middle, it would have been two. So the Gemara says, Taka barishona, I blow one normal tkiya. Umashach b'shniya kishtayim, and now when I'm blowing the second one, I blow it long enough that it could have been counted as really two. Says the Gemara, Ein biyado ela achas. Look, in the end of the day, you didn't stop, you didn't break in the middle of that blowing. So therefore, how many have you accomplished? Only two. even though you blew as long as three tekiyas, but since you only stopped in two parts, so therefore you would only have two tekiyas. Amai, says the Gemara, why true? Tisalik le bitarti psuki tekiyas, I'm sorry. Tisalik le bitarti, why don't you have that count as two? If we know that as long as you hear the beginning of a tekiya, or as long as you hear the end of a tekiya, it's good enough, so why shouldn't we say over here, if I blow a very long tekiya that really can count as two normal-sized tekiyas, why shouldn't I say that counts as two? Because as long as I hear the beginning of one or the end of the other, that would be good enough. So certainly over here, that should be the same. Is the question clear? Meaning, so just do one for 10 minutes straight.
Yeah, you,
so so that's the Gemara answers. Psuki tekiyasa mehadadi lo paskin. The Gemara says, no, no, no. Tekiyas are broken up, like you're saying. If you need a certain amount of tekiyas, they're broken up by the amount of stops, the amount of pauses, the amount of breaths that you take in the middle. You cannot count just because you went one longer than the other. You can't count that as two, even though it was as long as two would have been. But no, you have to break them up in order to be considered two tekiyas. There should be more Gemaras here in the middle. Tashmasa says the Gemara, we're going to bring another raya. What are we trying to bring a raya to? We're trying to bring a raya to the fact that maybe if you just hear the beginning or you just hear the end of a tekiya, that should be good enough. Tashma hatokeh letoch habur. I don't know why somebody would do this, but you have someone who's blowing a shofar right by the opening of a pit. Or letoch hadus, or into a cistern, or letoch hapitas, or you do it into a jug, or whatever it is. So now there's going to be an echo that comes forth from the bar, or there's going to be an echo that comes forth from the jug that you're blowing into. Im kol shofar shama. If you hear the shofar itself that was blown, yatsa, that's good enough, you fulfilled your obligation. But in kol havara shama, if all you heard was the echo sound from the pit that's reverberating the sounds that were blown from the shofar, lo yatsa, you have not fulfilled your obligation. Amai, asked the Gemara, why haven't you fulfilled your obligation in a case like that? Leipuk betchilas hatkiya mekame dila arbav kala. Look, we have such an invention as an echo. We all understand what that means. But before the echo begins, you have the real natural sound the way it's supposed to be. So why wasn't I fulfilling my obligation that first second and a half before the echo began? Isn't that good enough for a tekiya? Why do I have to go ahead and blow again just because I heard an echo together? Says the Gemara, Ella, it must be, you have to change what we said before. Tarti kali michad gavra lo mishtami. To hear two voices from one person is impossible. But mitrei gavra mishtami. If you hear it from two different people, then you are able to hear it. Really? So if I have two people talking on my two sides, this one is talking one conversation, the other one is talking something else, I'm going to really be able to pay attention and hear both of them? Says the Gemara, yes. But if I have one person who's making two noises, for example, I have a shofar that I'm blowing into a pit, so that's two voices coming out of the same shofar, then I can't pay attention. That's going to throw me off. Very surprising Gemara. So now the Gemara says, really, is that true? We're going to challenge that. Utrei gavri mimishtami, really, if I have two people talking into two sides of my ears, two different things, I'm really going to be able to pay attention. Vahatanya, don't we know that the Pasuk says, B'Torah, when we're reading the Kriyas HaTorah, and this is a Gemara in Megillah Daf Chaf Aleph, says the Gemara, when I'm reading in the Sefer Torah, Echad Koreh Ve'Echad Metargim. They used to have somebody who would translate. They would alternate. Somebody would read a Pasuk in Chumash. Not everybody understood what the Pasuk was talking about, was referring to. Not everybody had an art scroll Chumash, so they used to have a Meturgeman who would alternate with the Baal Koreh. So he would, every few Pasukim, he would switch off and he would translate. So the Gemara says, very nice, you have one person who's designated as the Baal Koreh, one person designated as the translator. However, Bilvad, Shelo, what do they change it? Shelo Yehe Echad Koreh, in order that you don't have the two of them reading at the same time. You have to have the alternation going on. You have to have first the Baal Koreh read, and then you have to have the person translate. But you can't have the person translating at the same time as the Kriyas HaTorah is going on. So don't you see that you're not able to have two people doing something and hear both of them? It's impossible. So that's the Gemara's question. Says the Gemara, Holo Damia Ella Lesefa. Says the Gemara, what's the reason? Again, where do we start? The start of the problem was, how come our Mishnah says you're allowed to have chatzotra and a shofar blowing at the same time? How does that work? Trei kolo lamashtami. I can't hear two things at the same time. I can't pay attention. Says the Gemara, no. Holo Damia Ella Lesefa. Says the Gemara, you know why our Mishnah is going to work? You know why if you have two shofars and a chatzotra blowing at the same time, you know why you'll be able to be mekayem your mitzvah? Because we're talking about something that is tekiya shofar. That's very special. That's something we're all excited about. And that's similar to Hallel and Megillah. That's similar to the times of year that we read Hallel and that we lay in the Megillah. And in those cases, afilu asara korin, the Gemara says even 10 people are allowed to read Hallel together, even 10 people are allowed to do Mikra Megillah all together. Why? Because alma kivin dechaviv yahiv daite, hachanami kivin dechaviv yahiv daite, says the Gemara, because when I'm doing something that is very exciting, like Hallel, like Mikra Megillah, everyone's all excited about Mikra Megillah, like blowing shofar, we only do it once a year, it's very exciting. Says the Gemara, when you do something of that nature, person is able to pay attention the way they're supposed to, because you have extra focus when you're very excited about it. You're not going to get distracted. So even though there's a shofar blowing and a chatzotzer blowing, you're going to know how to pay attention to the shofar because you're really excited about that. And even though there's 10 people reading the Megillah together, you're going to be excited about the Megillah, so you're not going to get distracted by all the other noise that's going on. And even though there's 10 people reading Hallel together, doesn't make a difference, you're going to pay attention. Says the Gemara, that's why in the Beis HaMikdash they were able to have shofar blowing at the same time as the chatzotzra, and there was no problem at all. Okay, very nice interpretation, very nice explanation, but the problem is that if that's the case, that I'm so excited about shofar, and because of that I'm going to be able to pay attention, then why did the Mishnah say that there was a requirement that you have to go longer on Rosh Hashanah with the shofar? Why was that significant? Why was that necessary? If, after all, the shofar and the chatzotzer could blow at the same time, and everyone is so excited about the shofar that they're going to pay attention to it, so why did the shofar have to extend the blowing a little bit longer? What was the point of that? So says the Gemara, the reason why was for the following. Ela lamim marach b'shofar. Why do we have the shofar being extended longer than the chatzotzra? We originally thought the reason why is because trei kol olam mishtami, you can't hear two things at the same time. But now we're saying that no, when I'm very excited about the mitzvah, I could hear two things at the same time, and I'm going to be able to pay attention, I'm not going to get distracted. So then why do we have this requirement of blowing the shofar longer in the Beis HaMikdash? What was that about? Says the Gemara, no. Leida shemitzvah sayom b'shofar. We want to make sure everybody knows, bottom line, what today's mitzvah is. So therefore, we're going to blow the shofar longer, that everyone should know, by the way, everybody, today's mitzvah is the shofar, not the chatzotzer. The chatzotzer is just supposed to be an enhancer, it's supposed to be something else, but that's not really the ikar mitzvah sayom. The real mitzvah today is the shofar blowing, and that's what everybody has to keep in mind. That's what our Gemara tells us, and that's a very interesting Gemara. Now, what emerges from this Gemara is a very important discussion, halacha l'maisa. We have a rule in our Gemara that trei kol olam mishtami. The Gemara tells us that there was a one-time occurrence on Maimed Har Sinai, Masha'ena pe yechol ledaber ein, ha'ozen yechol lishmoa. It's not a normal occurrence that happened on Har Sinai. Normally, you have two people talking at the same time, I cannot pay attention. There are some exceptions when we say, yeah, I'm so excited, Mikra Megillah, Hallel, things like that, then you're able to pay attention, but otherwise you can't. And that's what our Gemara quoted from Kriyas HaTorah. The Gemara has in Megillah Daf Chaf Aleph that you can't have two people reading at the same time, and you can't have someone, a Balkore, together with a translator reading at the same time, because everyone's going to get all confused, everyone's going to get all mixed up, and therefore we assume that that shouldn't be done, because we cannot pay attention. And similarly, the Ramah paskens that way. In Shulchan Aruch, they have to be very careful by the Kriyas HaTorah that you only have one person making noise, one person reading from the Torah. If you're going to have more than that, people are going to get all confused. So now, what about when you have Kaddish being recited by two Avelim at the same time in a shul? So, Trei Kol Olam Mishtami. I have one guy who's up to Yiskala V'Yiskadosh over here. The other one is saying V'Yatzmach Perkani over there. And the third one is doing Ashkenaz. And the other one is doing Nusach Ari. And everyone's all over the place. How am I paying attention to anybody? Trei Kol Olam Mishtami. So first of all, that's not right. Everyone should be saying Kaddish in the same Nusach. But let's say everyone's saying Kaddish in the same Nusach. Even if we do that, you start off, you scholar, we scholars together. This guy's in a rush to catch the train, so he's saying his Kaddish quickly. The other one is saying his Kaddish at a regular pace. How is it possible? He's up to Amin Yehesh Meirah, the other one's up to the end of Tiskabel. How am I going to be able to say Amen and answer carefully and really pay attention? Trei kol olam mishtami. This is not a joke. This is really a major discussion in the Chasam Sofer and others, that maybe we should adopt the practice of the Sfardim, which is only one person says Kaddish and they alternate. We have turns. Let's say we only have three people saying Kaddish now. Let's say we only have... So again, if you only have one Avil in the room, it's very easy. He's the Chazan. He says Kaddish and that's it. But what if you have five Avilim in the room? So we alternate. We take turns. That's the Minhag of the Sfardim. Only one person says Kaddish because Trei Kol Olam Mishtami. The only exception to the rule when we say you are able to hear two things at the same time is when it's very exciting. Well, unfortunately, Kaddish is not that exciting for us. It should be. Amin Yehesh Meirah is Koron Lo Gzardino. It's unbelievable. You have an unbelievable schus if you answer Amin Yehesh Meirah with Kavana. But bottom line, we're not so excited about Kaddish. And therefore, The Chasam Sofer and others were of the opinion that you should really choose only one person to say the Kaddish. So then later Achronim say, well, the Binyan Tzion, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, who wrote the Aruch Laner, writes in his Tshuva, maybe the Kaddish story is as follows. It depends if you're a Sephardi or an Ashkenazi. Sephardim, who are used, it's backwards, because the Sephardim are the ones who adopted the practice of only one person saying, but he has the opposite logic. He says, Sephardim, who very often, if you ever daven in a Sephardi shul, they daven much of the davening together. So let's say the Chazan starts Hodu, and everyone's following along saying Mila b'Mila along with the Chazan. So he says, Sephardim, who are very disciplined and know how to say every word along with the Chazan throughout the whole davening, they are able to have 10 people saying Kaddish at once because they know how to be disciplined and follow the rules. But Ashkenazim, who don't know how to follow the rules because this is not something we're accustomed to, the Chazan just says the beginning and end of paragraphs, and we don't really say word for word along. So he says, perhaps Ashkenazim really should not be doing this because we don't know how to follow along and follow the rules and do at the right pace that we're supposed to do. That's what he argues. So it's a very big discussion that the Achronim have. They say in the name of Rav Naftali Amsterdam, who is the Talmud Muvak of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, so they say that he wrote in his Tzava that, look, our practice in most Kehillas Ashkenaz is that we do say Kaddish altogether. We have many people saying it once. But he said that's only permissible if you're all going to stand at the same place and you're all going to be able to keep up with each other. But stam, you can have one person in this corner, one person in the other, and people scattered about all over the shul, and everyone's in a different place, then we say, Trei kol olam mishtami, it's not right. I know that my father, again, it's not the popular opinion, and when you're the one, unfortunately, who's saying Kaddish, you don't want to hear this psak, but my father also was very careful when he was saying Kaddish that only one person should say, even if it meant that he's not going to be the one to say. One person should say doesn't mean you have the Kaddish, it means you have to switch off with other people. And I remember in yeshiva, it was very uncomfortable because most people didn't know that my father was careful about it. So when my father was in Avelis, or when he has yard site, so I remember he would daven for the Yamud, yard site, Mincha, let's say. So he davens for the Yamud, and he's davening, everybody knows, oh, Shechter is yard site today. So after Mincha, at the end of Mincha, after Aleinu, everybody says Kaddish, all the Avelim. So they're all getting up to say Kaddish, and my father stops. So they're looking at him like, is this a new halacha? We don't say Kaddish on a yard site at the end of Mincha? What's this all about? And so then they stop saying Kaddish. So then here we are in the middle of a Kaddish, and everybody stops because they think if Shechter stops, that means we're supposed to stop. The real answer is because he feels that it's not really proper, the minig that we have, that we all say together. That's why in Breuers, they still have the Sfardish minig that only one person says, and they alternate, they switch off, and even if you're going to say, oh, I didn't get a chance, so they add on extra Kapitlach Tehillim at the end of davening to add extra Kaddishim, that people say a Kapitl Tehillim together, and then they're Chayv and a Kaddish, they're abundant, so that's what they do. Yeah. So Birchas Kohanim is a very good question. Many Achronim talk about Birchas Kohanim. So again, Birchas Kohanim, I think most Kohanim are on the same page. I think most Kohanim are on the same page more than by other things. Now what about, there's a question that people ask all the time, a very interesting question. People ask it all the time about boys and girls singing Zmiras together at the table. Right? So the Balabas starts to sing the Zmiras, or whatever the arrangement is, someone starts the Zmiras. And there are a bunch of guests, everyone sitting around the table. So what are you going to say? Only the men are allowed to sing, and Kol B'Yisha Erva, so the women at the table are not allowed to sing. So it's an uncomfortable thing. What are we supposed to do in a case like that? So I would never go, let's say, I would never go to hear a woman sing in a concert, right? Because I know Kol B'Yisha Erva, everybody knows that. But over here, they're sitting around my table, we're all singing Zmira. So the Svidi Eish, Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, writes that he was very surprised when he went to Berlin, and he says he went to a very God-fearing home, and he went to a home of religious Jews, and he was shocked that everybody's sitting around the table singing the Zmiras together. Don't they know? Kol B'Yisha Erva, how are they allowed to do this? He doesn't understand. So where is the Svidi Eish writing this? He's writing this in a response to, I think, in France or something like that. They had there was a very great Talmud Chacham in France who was doing Kiruv, and part of the movement was like an NCSY. So he would have everybody coming on a Shabbos, and they would all sit around and sing Zmiras together. And he asked the Svidi Eish, what do I do? I have the boys and the girls, everyone's coming, I'm doing Kiruv, what am I supposed to do about everybody singing together? So he writes three tzdadim lahakel, why he thinks it's permissible, and he doesn't have to disband this NCSY, this institution that he has of getting everybody together and singing Zmiras. Number one, he says, our Gemara says, Trei kol olam mishtami. The whole problem why you're not allowed to listen to a woman sing is because you're going to be paying such close attention, you're going to be so carried away by her voice. So you're going to say, oh, you're going to start having hirhurim, you're going to start thinking about it. But if you have two people singing at the same time, not two women, because two women defeats the purpose. But if you have two people, meaning one man, one is a woman, then you say, Trei kol olam mishtami, I'm not really able to pay such close attention to the woman's voice, because it gets mixed along with everybody else. She's doing a harmony that's more beautiful than everybody else is singing. Doesn't matter, but it just blends in with everything else. So the Sridi H says, maybe that's the first tzad lahakel, because That is the nature, that Trei Kol Olam Mishtami, I cannot pay attention so carefully, so closely, when there's a whole lot of other background noises going on at the same time. That's number one. Number two, he says, when you sing Zmiras, you're not going to have your Hurim. You're sitting at the Shabbos table, you're doing a mitzvah, you're singing the Zmiras the way you're supposed to, you're sitting along with the family. So what are you going to tell me? There's going to be a Hirur Aveira, maybe I'm going to think the wrong thing when I hear her singing Kol Mekadesh Shvi. I mean, come on. Like, and what are you getting carried away about? My brother just told me he knows someone who is marrying his seventh wife, so he called him and he said he's going to be mechabed him with Kol Mekadesh Shvi under the chuppah. Anyway, so that's the, my brother's a funny guy. So anyway, that's, yeah. One second, let me just say the third Tzad L'Hakel. So the Svidi Eish writes, number one, Trei Kol Olam Mishtami. Number two, the Svidi Eish writes, he thinks that there's no hirurim when you're singing Zmiras. Come on, let's not get carried away. And number three, he says, Eis Lasos L'Hashem Eferi Teresecha. How else are you going to keep these people connected? And I think that's a very relevant point to our generation as well. So what are you going to say? So often women feel disenchanted from Judaism. What are we doing to make them included? And I think it's a big problem. What are we doing to make them included? Doesn't mean that we should stand on our heads to make new institutions, but it means that at least in the places where it's a possibility to have them being involved, we shouldn't turn them away. If a woman enjoys singing the Zmiras, why would you go to her and say, I don't think you're allowed to? And I've asked my father this in the past, and he has said the same thing. I know in our house we have guests all the time. My mother always sang. She has a better voice than my father and all of us. And she always was involved. And the son-in-law of the Chassam Sofer, his name was the Chassan Sofer, points out that maybe this is the reason why in Sefer Shoftim, in Shiras Devora, we have the pasuk says, Vatasher Devora Hanaviyah Ubarak Ben Avinoam. What do you mean? Devora doesn't know how to sing. She's sitting there with her harp all day long, and she's an unbelievable Baal Munagin. So why does she have to have Avinoam come along? What's that about? So the Chassam Sofer son-in-law said, maybe it's because Trei Kol Olam Mishtami. She knows the halacha. She knows that Kol B'Isha Erva, she shouldn't be singing alone. But so she says, I don't want to give up on the opportunity to sing. I think it's important that I should be singing. But she says, going to do it along with somebody else. This way it will be drowned out. Trei Kol Olam Mishtami. So this is a issue. Again, has to do with sensitivities. If you're in Bnei Brak, it's probably not a good idea. But if you're living in our communities, I think it's not crazy to assume that the Sri De'esha's three Tzirufim of Kulas are something to rely on, and it's something acceptable. And I wouldn't be so fast to push people out and say, I'm sorry you're not allowed to sing with us because this is not the appropriate place to do it. Kol B'Isha Erva. I don't know. I'm not sure that's something we should be running to do. Yeah.
So after the Shira,
yeah,
where Miriam HaNeviah came out with the instruments,
right?
Right. So Miriam was leaving the singing with the other women.
Right.
I mean,
right, but the understanding was that they had their own party. In fact, the Shalal Kaddish points out that why is it that it says about Tan Lahem Miriam with a mem? It sounds
right, like
she's talking to the men. It should be like Tan Lahem to the women.
Right.
So what's that all about? So the Shalal Kaddish has a Harifistik of Pshat. He says maybe it means Batan Lahem, meaning there were some men. We always have some wise guys who come to watch the women's dancing at the wedding, right? They're always standing on the other side. So the Shalal says that's the same thing. What do you think? At Kriyas Yamsuk was any different? So you had most of the men were sitting around Moshe Rabbeinu doing what they were supposed to do, and you had a couple of men looking for a shidduch. So they were coming, looking, seeing the other side of the mechitza. Miriam turns to them and says, Batan Lahem, get out of here! Shira Lashem, you're having your own party. What are you doing here? Get away! So that's the way the Shalal explains what happened over there. I don't know if it's really what happened, but that's what he writes. Yeah? Yeah.
Women, that would be, wouldn't that apply? What is the thing of Trei Kol? I mean, if you don't hear the sound,
So it could be two women. Again, I think a lot of the camps in the summer have a shiria or something like that. So they have a lot of women. They have a whole choir of women singing together. So there are those who say, well, as long as you don't have one person, so you're not going to have a hearer because. But again, in our generation, I think with all the terrible things that are going on, we shouldn't just laugh off your hurim so quickly. I think we should be extra careful. And again, it's a kula. Trei Kol Olam Mishtami with two women is a big kula. Again, maybe when you have 20 women together, you're not focusing on anybody. But I don't know. I wouldn't be so quick. I think when you have a whole family together, it's not anything to be concerned about. But again, there are opinions in both directions. But I know that my father's not really concerned. But our Gemara does point out, yeah. Now, our Gemara does point out that there are times when you have a mitzvah which is so exciting. For example, the mitzvah of Tkiyas Shofar, or for example, the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, or something of that nature, where everybody's so excited, so then you're going to be able to focus. I don't think Shabbos Miras, everybody is so excited, so on a high, that they're going to be paying such close attention. But the question is, how far do we take that? How far do we say, well, what's considered exciting and what is not? So you take, for example, I saw a tremendous chiddush in Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky has a sefer on Arachayim. So they have Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky said that if you're in the middle of saying Kiddush Friday night, and your kids start screaming and yelling, and there's a lot of noise at the table, no, since Kiddush is so exciting, doesn't matter, you're not going to miss the words. Even though there's a lot of background music in the way, even though there's a lot of noise, it's not going to be a problem. I don't know, maybe in Reb Shmuel's house, Kiddush is very exciting, but, you know, I don't know, I think in most of our homes, Kiddush is Kiddush. And in fact, the Mishnah Berurah writes not that way. The Mishnah Berurah writes in Siman Reish Ayin Aleph Hilchos Kiddush, in the name of the Elyon Rabbah, that Lo Yukachu Shneim B'Yachad. He says two people shouldn't say Kiddush at the same time. First of all, because Berovam Hadras Melech, to have one person making amph of everyone at the table is better. But on the other hand, he says, also because Trei Kol Olam Mishtame, you're going to have two people saying Kiddush. This is not such an exciting experience of reciting Kiddush. We do it every week. Shofar is something we do once a year. Megillah is something we do once a year, so maybe that's different. But these other cases, I'm not so sure. With regard to our Gemara by Tkiyah Shofar being a very excitable mitzvah, and that's why there's no problem of Trei Kol Olam Mishtame. So how does that play out practically? So Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach writes in the Halicha Shlomo, in his Halachos about Rosh Hashanah, he writes a very practical example. He says, what's the din if you have the Makri is standing there, and he says, Tkiyah, and the Balkori is in a rush to get through the Tkiyah, so he starts before the Makri is finished. So what would he say in a case like that? Trei Kol Olam Mishtame. This guy's yelling out Tkiyah, and he's starting to blow already. So what would he say in a case like that? So says Reb Shlomo Zalman, the minig is lahakil. Why? Because we say, Aidi di Chaviva, since shofar is so exciting, the moment we start hearing the shofar, we're all very excited, even if the Makri is still going with his wording and he's saying whatever he's saying, we don't really get carried away with that, we don't get concerned. That's what Shlomo Zalman writes. I think it's a chiddush, but it's based off our Gemara, that Trei Kol Olam Mishtame, by something that is chaviva, by something that's very exciting, we have nothing to be concerned about because I will be paying attention. Again, Shlomo Zalman writes, there's room to argue that that's not the same case. When I have two people, let's say, reading the Megillah, so then you could say, Trei Kol Olam Mishtame, I'm going to pay attention to one of them, and I'll be able to do my mitzvah. When I have a shofar and a chatzotzros, I can say, well, I'll block out from my mind the chatzotzros, I'll only listen to the shofar, I'll do my mitzvah. But over here he says, the Makri's intent is not to hear the shofar right now. The Makri's intent is, I want to say my words. And the Balkeah's intent is, I don't want to listen to him. So in a case like that, when you have each one of them is going against the other, how can you say Trei Kol Olam Mishtame, and even the Makri himself can be Mekayim his mitzvah? How can that be? He's the one who's talking, he's making the noise. You can still say that he's going to be able to pay attention while he's making the noise when he doesn't want the noise to be there. But still, Shlomo Zalman says that the Minik is the Hakel, and the Makri himself doesn't have to go here to Tkiyos again. Yeah.
But the Tkiyos is going to surpass the
Makri's
calling or whatever.
So true. But I'm sure, as we've all been to certain shuls, where the Baal Tokeah is out of breath and he does a very quick tkiyah. So you're not always going to have the right amount of time that a tkiyah is supposed to take. So what do you do in a case like that? Again, most of the times it's not relevant because the Baal Tokeah is not so meticulous about how long the tkiyahs are. If you've ever been to Breuer's, it's an amazing, amazing thing to experience. On Rosh Hashanah, they have a Baal Tokeah stands there with a watch. Not one tkiyah is a second longer than it's supposed to be. Every single one is mamish like a machine. Somehow they never make a mistake. They never have to, like, do it twice. Every single one is exactly perfect. Never have to try a second time. Exactly time to the second. It's unbelievable. It's really amazing to hear. Most of our shuls are not like that. Most of our shuls have human beings being the Baal Tokeah, and human beings make mistakes so often. So it's a little bit different. The Yek is, I don't know, the Maile Minateva. So, yeah. Anyone else have a question?
How can I miss a Bichav and they not understand that the Iker is a shofar? The Gemara's answer that says that.
Uh-huh. Interesting. You're saying if the mitzvah is so special, if it's so chaviv, so how do you not know that the shofar is the day? Interesting. I don't know. Could be means not to prove to anybody, but maybe it means not. Maybe I overemphasize the point. Maybe the point over here in the Gemara is that we should make mention of the fact that today is Rosh Hashanah by blowing the shofar longer. I don't know. Your question's better than my answer, but I think it's an interesting point. Okay, let's move on in the Gemara. First wide line. Ubetanios, so the Gemara says when we have a Tainus Tibur, we blow Zecharim Kufufim. You have the shofar that is going to be Kufufim. Upiv Mitzupa Kesev, and you have the shofar is plated with silver. Ask the Gemara, Maishna Hasam Dezav, how come on Rosh Hashanah you plate the shofar with gold as the Mishnah taught us? And that's what we spoke about last week with the whole Abdinazer's question. Umaishna Hacha de Kesev, how come when it comes to a Tainus Tibur you have it plated with silver? When it comes to Rosh Hashanah, all of a sudden you have a plate of gold around the shofar. So the Gemara answers, Iba Yisema, Kol Kenufya the Kesef. The Gemara's first answer is, Exeris HaKasev, that whenever you have people gathering together on a Tainus Tzibur to listen to the Chatzotzros, You're supposed to have that made out of silver, not out of gold. Gzeres hakasev. Easy answer. Dechsiv asei lecha shtei chatzos v'skesev. V'ibayiseima, says the Gemara. Another answer. Why is it that on a tainis tzibur we use a silver-plated shofar and not a gold-plated shofar? A very strange answer. Nebuch, hatorah chasam amon and shal Yisrael. What, you're going to waste so much money to have a gold plate on top of the shofar? What, are you crazy? We're not going to make you do that. Nebuch, the Torah feels bad for us that we shouldn't waste too much money. Hatorah chasam amon and shal Yisrael. And therefore, we only make it out of silver, which is cheaper than gold. Ask the Gemara, well, if that's true, then how come when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, I'm going to use a shofar that has a gold plate on it? Why isn't the Torah concerned about my money then? Hasam nami neved de kesef. Why don't we make the plating, the fancy ornament on the shofar, the Rosh Hashanah, why don't we make that also out of silver instead of out of gold? Ay, hatorah chasam amon and shal Yisrael. Doesn't the Torah feel bad for me? Says the Gemara, no. You're right, that is a factor, but we have a counterfactor, and that is, afilu hachi kavad yamtif adiv. When we're talking about Rosh Hashanah and blowing the shofar in Rosh Hashanah borders on Kavod Yomtiv, you have to do something in honor of Rosh Hashanah, in honor of Yomtiv, so then we go all out when it comes to Yomtiv. When it comes to a tainis tzibur, the Torah says, tone it down, only make it out of silver, don't waste money. When it comes to Yomtiv, you should blow out your money, you should have Kavod Yomtiv, don't hold anything back. That's what the Gemara says. Rapapa bar Shmuel sabar lemevet ufto kemasnis. Rapapa said, well, this is such a beautiful minig. To have chatzotzos and a shofar blowing at the same time, what a beautiful chorus you're going to have. He said, we're going to do it in my shul also, even though he didn't live in the Beis HaMikdash. He had a shul out in Tveria, wherever he lived, out in Svat. And yet he said he wanted to do the same thing. Amalei Rava, so Rava told him, no, you're making a mistake. Lo amru elav HaMikdash. This is only the practice in the Beis HaMikdash, that they blow the shofar and the chatzotzos at the same time at Rosh Hashanah, but in a regular shul, we do it the way we all know, which is only to blow the shofar. We learned in a brisa the same thing. The only time that you blow a shofar and a chatzotzra is in the Beis HaMikdash. But when you're outside the Beis HaMikdash, makam sheyesh chatzotzros ein shofar, when you have a tainis tzibur, which is the day that you're supposed to blow the chatzotzros, then you don't blow the shofar. Makam sheyesh shofar, but on Rosh Hashanah, when you're supposed to blow the shofar, ein chatzotzros. V'chein hinig reb chalafta b'tzipori. That was the practice in Sipori. Rav Chanina ben Trani Mesichni Ukshaba Davar Eitzel Chachamim Amru Lahayinogin Kain Ela B'Shar Mizach Uvaharabayis Bovad. This was only the practice in the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim, but it was not the practice outside. The practice outside was that we only blew a shofar in Rosh Hashanah, and on a Tanis Tzibur we blew a Chatzotzer, and that was it. No chorus, no other background music. Amar Rav Yitim Rav Yishev and Levi Maikra. How do we know that this is true? Dechsiv the chatzotzros v'kol shofar. When do you have the opportunity of hearing both the chatzotzros and the kol shofar all mixed together? That's only lifnei melech Hashem. So it's only lifnei melech Hashem who debeinah chatzotzros v'kol shofar. Avu bi'almalo. The only time you need the kol shofar is when you're lifnei Hashem, when you're in the Beis HaMikdash. But when you're not, so you don't have to have the kol shofar. Now this institution that the Gemara tells us of HaTorah Chasam Amon and Shal Yisrael is a very fascinating principle. The Gemara says over here that the Torah feels so bad about somebody's money, and therefore the Torah says you shouldn't use a gold plating for the Chatzotzra because that's going to cost too much money. When it comes to the Shofar Shal Rosh Hashanah, so then, okay, you can blow out your money because it's in honor of Yom Tov. But otherwise you shouldn't use gold, you should only use silver. Now, there's a beautiful story that's told about the Rav of Yerushalayim who was Reb Shmuel Salant. So the story goes that a woman once came to Reb Shmuel Salant's home, and she was crying, she was hysterical, she was nervous, and she walks in and she says to him, it's Erev Shabbos, and I was cooking my chicken soup, and I just saw that milk spilled into the chicken soup. So am I allowed to, you know, they were very poor, they didn't have a lot of money, this was it for the week, so she didn't know what to do. So she comes to him and she starts to talk to him, what should I do, Rabbi, what should I do, I have a shiloh. So he starts to ask her all the proportions, all the sizes, all the amounts, how much milk was there, how much meat was there, how much chicken soup, how much this, how much that. And he couldn't figure out whether there was really shishim, whether it was enough of a ratio to say that the milk should be discredited, that the milk should be as if it's not there. So he said to her, you know, do me a favor, call up the milkman. I want to know who your milkman is. I want you to bring him to the house. She says, what are you, the milkman? She says, don't worry about it. I want to talk to the milkman. He brings the milkman to the house, turns to the milkman, he says, tell me honestly, how much water did you mix into the milk before you sold it to the customer? So the milkman says, I'm not telling you. He says, I'm not getting you in trouble. I just want to know. So it was a genius of an answer what he did. So he said, after he figured out how much milk was in the mixture and how much water was in the mixture of milk, so he said to himself, now we have the proper proportions, now we have the ratios, and therefore there's no longer a concern. There's enough of shishin to be mevatel against the milk. He called the woman back and he said, go enjoy all your food, enjoy your family, don't worry, there's nothing to worry about, everything's kosher. So That was the story that he said. Upon that occasion, he turned to his Talmidim and he said the following. He said, I have two principles that I always keep in mind whenever I have a Shiloh that comes to me. Number one, he said, the most important principle is Koach da Teira Adif. The greater Talmud Chacham that you are, the more you'll be able to figure out how to come up with a heter when it's possible. Again, not to bend the letter of the law, but to figure out how to make life livable for people. That's the greatest koach that a person could have. And he said, that's the first principle I always keep in mind. Number two, he said, HaTorah Chasa al-Mamonon Shal Yisrael is always a principle that I take very seriously, that the Torah has sympathy, the Torah is mindful, the Torah is considerate of our money. And we don't just say, oh, what's the big deal? Just spill out the soup and make another one. No. HaTorah Chasa al-Mamonon Shal Yisrael. And said of Shmuel Salant, the Rav of Yerushalayim, these are something that we take very, very seriously. These are two principles, that number one, Koach, the Teira Adif. Number two, HaTorah Chamamon and Shal Yisrael, are two principles that he took very seriously, and that's why he went above and beyond his obligation. He called in the milkman because he said, I had to do whatever I could to save the woman her money and not lose out. So what exactly is this principle of HaTorah Chasa al-Mamon and Shal Yisrael? Where exactly does it come from? So it really stems from a pasuk in Parshas Metzora. We have in Parshas Metzora the story of Tzaras. So Tzaras doesn't only come on a person's body. Tzaras, the Gemara says, also can come on somebody's house. So one Gemara says that Tzaras on a house never happened and never will happen. But the Psukim tell us that there is such a thing as Tzaras. So what's the procedure? The Kohen comes and he looks at it and he says, well, looks like an Eged Tzaras, I'm not sure. Well, we're going to have to come back for a week. Comes back a week later, he says, okay, we're going to close it down for another week. We'll see if it grows or if it shrinks in another week. And then we'll decide what's the story with this house. If he comes back after 2 weeks and he sees that now the Tzaras has grown and he really determines that it is Tzaras, the whole house has to be destroyed, it has to be knocked down. So the Gemara says, based on a pasuk, that the Kohen says, Ufinu as habayis, the Kohen comes and he says, clear out the house. This is the third time he's come. He says, first, clear out the house. Take out all the furniture, all the pots, all the pans, the ovens, all the everything. Take everything out of the house. And then he's going to go do the inspection and say, oh, I'm sorry, this house is a Tzaras house, Tzaras stricken house, gotta knock it down. Why does he do that? Says the Gemara, the reason why he does it is because HaTorah Chasa al-Mamon Shel Yisrael. It's bad enough that you have to have your house knocked down, but why should he make you go ahead and lose all of the items in your house as well? So therefore he first says, you're gonna wait, I'm gonna wait to make a psak on the house until everybody takes everything out. Only once everything's removed from the house, then we're gonna go ahead and actually declare and proclaim this house as being a bayis hamanuga, and now you have to knock it down. So that's where we find the introduction to this idea of HaTorah Chasa al-Mamon and Shal Yisrael. Now, the Gemara Menachos seems to say that we learn it from a different pasuk. The Gemara Menachos tells us this is not the case. The Gemara says, HaTorah Chasa al-Mamon and Shal Yisrael, we have a principle that the Torah is sympathetic, is caring about our money. Hey, Charemiza, asked the Gemara. How do you know that that's true? So what should the answer have been? Bayis hamanuga. Ufino as habayis, a pasuk in Chumash. No, we have a new pasuk, Parshas Chukas. What's in Parshas Chukas? Where we're told, Kach esamata v'hakel asa'ida ata v'yaron achicha. Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron are told that they should go ahead and provide water for the Jewish people. Okay, so far so good. Hotzei sala hamayim in asela, and I want you to take out water from that rock and give it v'shkisa esa'ida. I want you to go and give it to the Jewish people. After all, they're thirsty. They don't have anything to drink. V'es b'iram. I want you to also feed their cattle and their livestock. Says the Gemara, why does that have to be added in? So what? So let the animals die. They're in a desert after all. There's no water. Too bad. God has to make a miracle for the animals to live also? So the Gemara says yes, because God is sympathetic. God is merciful not only to the Jewish people, not only to human beings, but also to the money of a human being. And therefore, he doesn't want all of our money to be lost. He doesn't want all of our cattle to die out. And therefore, we have to make a miracle even to sustain the money of his people as well, not just to sustain the people themselves. So the question that the Nodi Behuda and others ask is, why do we need two separate psukim? One by Bayis HaManuga, one over here by everybody's property. So he writes as follows. He says, well, by everybody's property, you'll say, well, that's a lot of money. That's everybody's property. That's everybody's cattle, everybody's livestock. They're all going to die in the desert if we don't do something. So over there, you'll say, God is sympathetic to the money, millions of dollars. Look how much we're going to lose. That's where you say he's sympathetic. However, when it comes to one person's house, oh, you knocked down your house. Too bad. So you lose your oven, you lose your fridge, you lose your pots, your pans. So too bad. It's your problem. It's just the yachid. No, over there also. We have to be sympathetic. We have to be mindful even of one person's money, even if it's not a lot of money. But you have to be mindful even of one person's money. And the Nodi Behuda writes as well, how mindful do we have to be that God is even willing to change the Teva, to change nature and make a miracle happen in order to make sure that the money is going to be saved. That's how seriously we have to take people's money. It's not something to be taken lightly. That's what we learned from our sugya. Now, this is not just a nice little concept that the Gemara has, a Torah Chasam Anshei Yisrael, oh, we should feel bad about people's money. No, this is something that really has halacha lemaisa consequences. For example, we have our Gemara in Rosh Hashanah where we're told, based on this principle of a Torah Chasam Anshei Yisrael, what kind of shofar do you use on Rosh Hashanah? What kind of shofar do you use on a tainus? Do you use one that's gold or do you use one that's silver? That's a major nafkamina lahalacha. We have a Gemara in Yuma Daf Lamed Tes where the Gemara says, when the Kohen Gadol used to go ahead and make the drawing of the lots for the Sar Mishtaleach on Yom Kippur to know which one was going to be thrown off the cliff and which one would be kept in the Beis HaMikdash, so he used to put the two pieces of paper into a box. That box, says the Gemara, was made out of wood. Why was it made out of wood? Says the Gemara, HaTorah Chasam Amon HaShayisrael, what a waste of money. You're going to make a gold, fancy, beautiful box, a big lottery box, just to use one time, one day a year for 1 minute? Doesn't make sense. Says the Gemara, use the cheap, use the wood, because HaTorah Chasam Amon HaShayisrael. We find also an interesting application as well. The Yerushalmi says, what if you have a case of likud atzamos, which happens every so often. You have somebody, let's say somebody's great-great-grandparents died in the Holocaust, not that long ago, died in Europe, and now they're buried in Europe. Now the family becomes a wealthy family. They say, why is the great-great-grandmother buried out in New Hupitzville somewhere in Europe? Nobody's going to go there. Wouldn't it be a bigger honor for her to be buried in Eretz Yisrael? So you're allowed to move the body, you're allowed to inter the body and move it to Eretz Yisrael. But the day that you inter the body, again, great-great-grandmother wouldn't be a good example because there's no avelus for them, but let's say it was a grandparent. So the child of that grandparent has to go ahead and observe avelus on the day that the likud atzamos was done, on the day that they're moving the body to the other place. You have to observe avelus, like Shiva, on that day. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes that lahalacha, and he says, therefore the practice is that we don't go ahead and tell the people when we're doing it. Again, you hire the service to go ahead and do it for you, and they're going to do it whenever they do it, and you tell them, let me know when you're done. Let me know when it's all done. Don't tell me on the day that you're doing it, because the Chasam Sofer writes, HaTorah Chasam Amon Anshei Yisrael, because we don't want that people should have to take off a day of work and sit Shiva. Why should we make people do that? So again, we're not talking about when the parent dies. You don't say, oh, don't tell the person because HaTorah Chasam Amon Anshei Yisrael. That's an embarrassment to the parents. But over here, we're talking about a case. You already sat the Shiva. You already did everything you're supposed to do. Now you're talking years later when you're moving the body somewhere else. So there's a halacha, you're supposed to sit Shiva one day. So says the Chasam Sofer, we have adopted the practice that we don't go ahead and tell them because we want to make sure that we don't make people lose out on money. HaTorah Chasam Amon Anshei Yisrael. There's something very unusual that we find every so often in Yeradeya. And that is, when you have a shaila, is this pot kosher or treif? So you say, well, let's figure out, is it kosher or is it treif? Imagine, if this much milk fell into the chicken soup, so then it's treif, and if that much milk fell in, it's kosher. Very simple. Every once in a while, you have a halacha, which is, really, the pot is treif. But if it's a hefsed meruba, if you're going to lose a lot of money, then the pot is kosher. So what does that mean? What is this, a joke? So I'll tell you. I think I'm a high-powered lawyer. I get paid $7,000-$8,000 an hour. For me, it's a hefsed meruba not to work on Shabbos. No. Hefsed meruba. I can make $5,000-$6,000 an hour. I don't know if a lawyer makes so much, but you can make a nice amount of money. What? Okay, but you can have somebody who makes a lot of money. Let's say I'm a surgeon. I can make a lot of money off of surgery. I happen to have a scheduled surgery this Shabbos. You can't do it? What do you mean? Why don't you say hefsed meruba, just like by a pot in the kitchen? You say, well, it depends. Let's figure out how expensive is the pot, and let's see how much money you're going to lose. Same way we say hefsed meruba, you're allowed to be mekel. So over here also we should say hefsed meruba, be mechal Shabbos. Why not? Why not? So what's this all about? How can we say over here hefsed meruba, all of a sudden you're allowed to break the rules? So the Ramah actually confesses. He talks about this, and he says, don't just think the whole Shulchan Aruch is a joke. Don't think every time I come up and I say hefsed meruba is mutter that it means, oh, so Shabbos you're allowed to work also hefsed meruba. Says the Ramah, that's not what it means. Es natzel atzmi bedavar echad shelo yechashduni hama'ayin, says the Ramah. I'm nervous. People are going to read my commentary on Shulchan Aruch. They're going to say, hey, who is this Ramah? What kind of clown is he? What is this? All of a sudden, hefsed meruba, you're allowed to be meko? What is this? What is he, just bending the rules just because you're going to lose money? Says the Ramah about himself, I'm nervous. Shelo yechashduni hama'ayin. Someone's going to look at me and say, this guy's a farce. What kind of sefer did he write? All of a sudden, hefsed meruba, the rules fall aside. Buhu ki lefamim kasafti lahakal behefsed meruba, says the Ramah. So what's that all about? How come I allowed it? So he explains as follows. The Ramah suggests that really the reason why he was mekel in those cases is because we have a machlokas harishonim about a certain halacha, let's say. And really, me'ikar adin, we paskin one way. So he says that's why the pot is treif, because we paskin like those opinions. However, he says there is a descending opinion that was rejected that feels that in such a scenario, in such a case, the pot would be kosher. So he says, if it's just a small amount of money, so then we say you have a small amount of money, so you should really satisfy most opinions and you should throw the pot out, no big deal. But if we're talking about a hefs and merubah, he says in a case like that, you have a right to rely on the other opinions that were originally a part of the equation. Not that we just say the Torah is a joke and we can always bend the rules. No. When it's a hefs and merubah, you have a right to revert back to the original other opinion, which was that such a scenario is mutter. And that, says the Ramah, is why hefs and merubah is permissible. So again, that also ties into this over here, whether we say hefs and merubah is something that we allow, or, I'm sorry, whether we say that HaTorah Chasam Aman Shal Yisrael will play out in the halachic system. There is a very important question that's raised by Rabbi Elazar Fleklish. He was in the 1700s, 1800s. He was the Talmud Muvak of the Nodibi Yehuda. He wrote the Sefer Tshuva Me'ava, a very important Sefer. So the Tshuva Me'ava raises the following issue. And he writes that he wrote to his Rebbe, the Nodibi Yehuda, that he was very bothered, he was very torn. Why was he torn? Because he said, we have a few cases where the Gemara says, HaTorah Chasam Aman Shal Yisrael. Number one, our Gemara. Our Gemara says, don't use gold on the shofar, only use silver, because the Torah feels bad, the Torah is sympathetic, we shouldn't waste money. We have another case, the Gemara says in Yuma, don't make the box for the raffle on the Sar Mishtalech, don't make it out of gold, that's going to be a waste of money, you should make it out of wood. On the other hand, he says, we have different cases in the Gemara where we're told, Ein anius b'makam ashiris. Don't be cheap in the Beis HaMikdash, come on, this is God's house, you should go all out. And therefore the Gemara says, when you have to feed the carbon tamid before you shecht it on the Mizbeach, you have to feed it some water, you have to give it something to drink. The Gemara says you have to give it a cup made of gold, a beautiful cup. Why? Because Enani is Malkam Ashiris. This is not a little barn over here. This is God's house. This is the Beis HaMikdash. We don't act cheap in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara has a whole bunch of examples where we say, Enani is Malkam Ashiris. So he says, how do we know when to apply which principle? On the one hand, you say, HaTorah Chasam HaMonu Shal Yisrael, take it easy, tone it down. Don't make such fancy chatzotzros. Don't make them out of gold. Only make them out of silver, because God feels bad. Don't waste your money. And the Gemara also says, don't make the box for the Sar Mishtaleach on Yom Kippur made of gold or silver, because that's going to be a waste of money. You should only make it out of wood. On the other hand, you have the same exact Gemaras that say that there are things we should say, no acting skimpy, no acting cheap in the Beis HaMikdash, go all out, spend all the money. So how do you know when to apply which principle? And he writes, Mialdusi amadati al chakira achas. He writes, since I was a child, now this is not what I was thinking about when I was a child, but Rav Lezer Fleklish, this is what he was bothered with as a kid, he wanted to know, what's the din, what's the cutoff, how do I know, when do I say yes and when do I say no, how do I figure out what the guideline is? So he says, he wrote to Shaila, he sent it to his Rebbe, the Nodibi Yehuda, and he asked him, what's the principle, what's the guiding principle, and when would I say that we do, when do I say that we don't? So the Nodibi Yehuda writes back to him the following, Dalecha, Shemashu Mukhrech Bikli Shareis, Amrinan ba ein anias b'makam ashiris. He says the cutoff, the bottom line is, anytime that you need a klishares, anytime that you need something to be a klishares, then we say no acting cheap. You got to go all out, because that's one of the most important parts of the Beis HaMikdash. You have to have a functioning Beis HaMikdash with all the integral parts of everything that's necessary to have a running Beis HaMikdash. So therefore he says on any of those kalim that are very important, very essential for the Beis HaMikdash, then you need to have Einanis makam ashiris, you need to go all out, make it out of gold. However, he says, when we're talking about something that is not essential, obviously it's something that's used in the Beis HaMikdash, but it's not essential, it's not one of the main parts, it's not a klisharis. In a case like that, he says, it would not be necessary to spend so much money, then we would apply the principle of HaTorah Chasam Aman Shal Yisrael. The problem is, as the Tshuva Me'ava points out, that this is not so clear. You go through all the cases that the Gemara has in both directions, it's not clear that the rule really works out. Again, there are others who talk about it as well. I think the Yom Shrua writes in his Sefer, the Kapas Tamarim, he writes in his Sefer that the answer is, the Chazal figured out. When we say this, when we say that. Okay, it's a very nice answer, but it doesn't help us. How did Chazal figure it out? How did they know what the cutoff is? He just says, Chazal made the rule, so they, you know, it just sounds like it's arbitrary. They just said this here, and they said that over there. So we want something that's more juicy than that. That's not such an exciting terrace. We want something that's more of the Hagdara than that, but he suggests that over here, maybe the cutoff is whether it's a klisharis or not, which would tie into, let's say, is a knife, is the sakin shel shchita, is that considered a klisharis, is it not? So big machlokas are rishonim, whether we consider that big de kuhuna are considered klisharis, not so clear, maybe they are, maybe they're not. In fact, the Gemara says that the Kohanim used to use the big de kuhuna to sleep on at night, so how are they allowed to use it if it's a klisharis, you can't have hanah from it. All these kinds of questions which make us wonder what is considered to be Ein Anias B'makam Ashiris, what is considered not to be, what is considered to be Klisharis, what is not. So this is something that emerges from our Gemara. Again, our Gemara says over here that we're going to be careful about people's money. We're going to say, HaTorah Chasam Amonot Shel Yisrael. Yet in other cases, points out the Tshuva Me'ava, we say that Ein Anias B'makam Ashiris, a person has an obligation to go all out for the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, Mitzvah Shem, next week we will continue.